Well, howdy there, stranger. I'm Jordy.
And I'm Brad.
And welcome back to Beers with Queers, the true crime podcast where I research a case and Brad here, and potentially you guys,
don't know a damn thing about it. But guess what, folks? This week, that's not true. The truth is, old Jordy here partied a little bit too hard this last weekend and he lost his voice. Luckily, old Brad's got one in the tank just for occasions like this.
So, yeah, sit back and relax. This is another Brad episode. I know you guys love those. And I'm probably going to try and talk as little as possible and let Brad take the reins. So, enjoy.
That's not going to happen. I've got you written into this one, old Jordy.
Might as well just jump right into it then, I guess.
I'm going to start this week's episode by playing something for you, and I want you to tell me if you recognize the sound.
I think that is a sound that a lot of gay men, queer men recognize. It's a bit iconic.
And what is the sound?
It is none other than the sound from the Grindr app. So I think we all know, at least everyone, both straight and queer, knows what Grindr is. And that is the sound. I think that's the sound. It's been a long time. So I think it's a sound that it makes when you get a message or tap them. I don't remember which, but that is just the iconic sound associated with that app.
And you want to take a quick stab, and I mean a really quick stab, because I'm going to go into it in detail. What Grindr is for our straight friends out there?
So Grindr, if you don't know what it is, it's essentially a gay hookup app. Of course, it's marketed kind of like the gay version of Tinder, but that is not what it's used for. It is used to find other men in the area. More often than not, I mean, it can be used for friends and stuff like that, but more often than not, it is to meet up and have sexual relations with other men or queer people on there. And sometimes it's strangers and sometimes it's not, and it's basically just a little grid that has everyone within like a 20 mile radius of you, and you can just have at it, scroll through. It tells you what they're interested in, there's like stats like their height and their weight. Sometimes they have a photo. There are a lot of headless torsos on the Grindr app. So,
well, like you said, I think most gay men out there can instantly recognize the sound. And probably a few straight men's wives recognize the sound of their husband's favorite mobile game. And you know that's happened quite a few times out there.
And that is another thing, too. There's a lot of on the DL men on Grindr. So that's what I mean by like headless torsos. Like they will not show their face to you at all. So it's kind of a gamble if you do decide to meet up with them.
So I am going to start this episode off with kind of explaining Grindr in detail. It's pretty quick for all the straight people out there, and it's probably going to be kind of funny to hear it like told to gay men, because we know exactly what it's for, but you know, there's a little bit of history to it and everything. So here we go. Grindr was first launched on March 25th, 2009 as an iOS mobile app. It wasn't available on Android devices until 2011, which probably explains why there are so many iPhone gays out there in the world. And just so everyone knows, that's an inside knock at Jordy here, who's always going on about how superior Apple is to Android, but he will step back and ask me to take a picture with my Android phone every so often.
I mean, the iPhone's not the end-all be-all, I'll admit that. Like, Android is superior camera, but I feel like, you know,
that's what he's saying on here, folks, but he is an Apple snob. And, you know, honestly, that might be part of what it is. If Grindr was out on Apple for a lot, I mean, that's years before it came out on there, probably be a snob myself. The way Grindr works is users create a profile where they can upload pictures and give a brief bio of themselves. Grindr utilizes GPS to show a grid of profiles based on proximity with approximate distances from you. You can click on those users' profiles and see their pictures and a bio, as well as initiate chats via a built-in messenger. This totally changed the game for the majority of gay men. Before Grindr, gay bars and clubs were the primary sources to meet gay men, but in isolated locations and small towns, this really wasn't an option. These men found it difficult to connect with other gays. For these men, they just had to be in the right place at the right time out there in the wild. In the wild, Jordy, can you imagine those days?
It was a little before my time, but I have heard stories of like cruising and pickle parks and stuff like that. Like the old days when you actually had to risk it all, especially back when being gay was very illegal, had to risk it all to go to some random park or bathroom in the middle of the night, just in hopes of meeting a like-minded individual who wanted to, you know, have some fun. So it was a risky gamble that, hey, you know, you had to do what you had to do.
Yeah, and just add on the fact that neither of you knows the other one is actually gay. So one man would have to make a lingering eye contact, and we all know, we've seen that lingering eye contact, and just hope for the best. It's like, can you imagine how scary that had to be? I mean, you look at the wrong person the wrong way, and it can go very, very wrong. And people speak of gaydar, but that's really not something you want to gamble with on your life, you know, because like I said, this literally could be dangerous if you kind of like hit on the wrong man and everything. So Grindr like really changed all that. But good old Grindr took all of that away. Suddenly you had a crystal ball that showed you all the gay men around you. Now you could go to the grocery store and check if that big bearded butcher daddy that you've had your eyes on pops up on Grindr. And if he does, the implication is he's down for some fun. All you have to do now is message him and discuss a completely different cut of meat, if you know what I mean.
I do like that Brad has written in some jokes this week.
I got the funnies, folks. And the big thing is, all of this was done very discreetly. I mean, the two people that have, like, Grindr are in on it. They see each other, but everybody else around sees nothing. So this made Grindr very popular. In fact, Grindr boasts around 13.5 million monthly active users using it. That makes it the eighth most used dating app in the world. And that's actually saying a lot, because all the other apps that are in the top have the straight population bolstering it. And then on that, add in that the majority of users identify as male, again, cutting out the numbers of the female population. So you're talking like there's a lot of gay men using Grindr.
And a lot of quote-unquote straight men using Grindr.
Yes. Now, I can almost feel the eyes roll and hit me from across the world when I referred to Grindr as a dating app. Because most gays know that Grindr is commonly used to find casual sexual encounters. But that is technically what it's classified as. And I'll tell one on myself real quick. So, I was in a monogamous relationship most of my life, starting when I was 15 years old. So, I never went on a date until I turned 31. So, when my relationship finally ended, I had no idea how to date, or where to go to meet people, or anything. So I did what anyone would do, and I Googled, how do you meet gay men? Google said to try a dating app, such as Grindr or Scruff, and so that's what I did. And looking back on it now, it's so funny because I think of all those dates, and I put that in quotation mark, that I went on, and I mean, I legitimately thought they were dates. And I always heard that you are a whore if you put out before the third date. So I went on so many of these dates with these confused guys at the end when I give them a hug and I'm like, hey, I hope that we can do this again sometime. And then later, you know, of course, it wasn't until someone actually took that as an offense and was like, you know, what's wrong with me? And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, well, you know, you don't want to hook up and, you know, you got me on a hookup app. And I was like, what? And they explained what Grindr was. And I was like, oh my gosh, this actually makes a lot more sense. You know, there was a lot of like awkward kind of casual hugs at the end of the night. So that's my letting you in on a little bit of me. And although the case we are about to discuss is the absolute worst case scenario for a Grindr hookup, the truth is, as wonderful as the app is for its intended purpose, it comes with some very big downfalls that can lead to some very dangerous situations. Grindr doesn't require vigorous profile verification. This allows users to misrepresent their age, intentions, or even HIV status, making it a fertile ground for catfishing and predatory behavior. The lack of a matching system further exacerbates this, as users can initiate contact without mutual interest, increasing the risk of harassment and unsolicited messages. And I know every gay man out there that has used Grindr has gotten a dick pic, or worse, that as a hello. That's literally the hello pic.
That's how they open up a lot of the times. It's either a picture of their penis or their butthole. And so that is how you say hello, apparently, on Grindr 90% of the time.
And I hope our straight listeners are still with us. You're about to learn all kinds of stuff today. Grindr's location-based feature presents another danger. While it facilitates connections, it also exposes users' whereabouts to a certain degree. Knowing a user's general vicinity can be exploited for stalking or setting up dangerous encounters. This is particularly concerning for members of the LGBTQ+ community who might face discrimination or violence. So, you know, like, not everybody on Grindr is gay. Sometimes there's some gay bashers out there that's like, man, this is easy. I can just lure people in to wherever. And the thing is, all of the users on Grindr, they know and accept these risks. I'm not telling anybody out here anything new. You know, they know it and they accept the risks.
That's part of it, especially when you have, like, you know, a lot of the time this is late night booty calls or something like that. Like, you are taking a risk and a gamble that they're being truthful. They're not catfishing. Like, the photos you see on Grindr are of them, because, you know, definitely heard some horror stories of people getting to someone's, like, house or something miles away and then complete different catfish. So it's a gamble still. I mean, it's not much different than the cruising or pickle park, where you honestly aren't sure who you're hooking up with or taking home.
That's true. And that's why I took the extra bit of time to explain Grindr before I jumped in today's case, because for our straight listeners out there, it may be hard for them to wrap their head around just picking a stranger off an app because they're close by and then going and meeting them in real life for a quick sexual encounter. Many times, never knowing each other's names. And you guys know that's the truth. So now that everybody's on the same page, let's jump into today's case. Kevin Bacon was a 25-year-old openly gay man living in the small suburb of Michigan called Swartz Creek. He was known to be a hard worker and had recently worked his way up from being a receptionist at a local hair salon to being one of the stylists. And at this time, he was also a student at the University of Michigan, Flint, studying psychology. And Kevin wasn't a small guy. He was 6'2", so keep that in mind as we go along in this story. On Christmas Eve, 2019, Kevin told his roommate Michelle that he was going to meet up with a guy that he had met on Grindr. Unfortunately, this would be the last time Kevin would ever be seen alive. When Kevin didn't show up for a Christmas morning breakfast that they had planned to attend with his family, they knew something had to be wrong and immediately reported Kevin missing. So concern grew after Kevin's roommate confirmed that he never returned home after meeting a stranger on the internet. So everybody knew this was potentially a very bad scenario. So, like, all his friends, his family, they all rallied together. They went around. They started knocking on doors, looking for people and everything like that. And after 3 days of searching, police found Kevin's car parked at a Family Dollar about 5 miles from where he lived. Inside the car, they found Kevin's wallet, his cell phone, which by themselves would be alarming, but they also found the clothing Kevin was wearing the day he went missing, and as far as anyone knew, he didn't have any other clothes to change into. When they looked at the messages on Kevin's phone, they spotted a conversation between Kevin and a man called Olikos Kaloukas on Grindr. The man would later be identified as Mark Latunsky. Police drove the 20 miles to go talk to Latunsky at his home in Bennington Township. When they got there, Latunsky seemed very calm and gave them permission to walk around his house. When officers walked into the basement, a horrific scene unfolded before them. Hanging from the rafters by his ankles was the naked body of Kevin Bacon. Kevin's throat had been cut, and there were other cuts all over his body. Latunsky calmly told the police how he had stabbed Kevin in the back twice and then hoisted his body up using a rope to drain the blood. He then told them how he had cut out his testicles and took them upstairs and cooked and ate them. He told them how he had planned to use Kevin's blood and bones as fertilizer for his plants and planned to make jerky out of the rest. A food dehydrator was actually intercepted coming to his house after he was arrested. So this man was serious.
Yeah, he was not just talking out of his ass. He was very serious about what he was going to do, and he was going to literally butcher.
I mean, he already ate his testicles right off the bat, like instantly went up, cooked them after he cut them out and ate them.
Yeah, he's going to literally butcher him like a deer or something. It sounds horrible.
So I'm briefly going to tell you about Mark Latunsky's life prior to his heinous crime, because there were some seriously overlooked red flags over the years. And this is just another one of those examples of a ticking time bomb that's being ignored until it finally goes off. Latunsky was a smart man. He earned his master's degree in chemistry in 1995 from Iowa State University after attending Central Michigan University from 1987 to 1991. He was married to a woman named Emily Latunsky in 2001, with whom he had four children, but she ended up divorcing him in 2013 after he was diagnosed as having severe mental issues in 2010 and 2012, including major depression, paranoid schizophrenia, and possible personality disorder, to which he refused any treatment for. She testified at her divorce hearing, "When he doesn't take his medicine, he'll watch torture horror movies, talk to himself, stay out all night, threaten to get rid of his children's animals, claim that his son isn't his child, and fail to shower and shave." Later that same year, Latunsky faced arrest after kidnapping two of his children. Like I said, there's some red flags here. Later that year, Latunsky faced arrest after kidnapping two of his children, and when the police confronted him, he introduced himself as William Gregory Dean and claimed that Mark Latunsky had been killed with the stroke of a pen. That's according to the police report. So right there's some red flags, right?
I was going to say, there's a lot of red flags right here, especially all those mental illnesses and not taking your medication. And it's a tough situation to be in because you can't force them unless they're on like an involuntary hold. But it is weird that she mentioned like when he doesn't, like one of the red flags was he watches horror movies.
Horror and torture movies.
Okay, torture movies, yeah. It's like, we're huge fans of horror movies, so I'm like, yeah, that might be a red flag for me. I don't know.
And he also kidnapped his children, that's a red flag right there, folks. That's a big red flag. So later he married a man named Jamie Arnold, and the two stayed together for around 5 years, but that marriage too ended in divorce as Latunsky's mental health declined even further. By this point, Latunsky had been committed to hospitals 4 times for mental health concerns, and the police were very familiar with those concerns, and no one did anything about it. Even after police responded to 2 separate 911 calls from men who had escaped from Latunsky's basement just months before the murder of Kevin Bacon. You heard me right. 2 men escaped from Latunsky's basement with police intervention just months before Kevin was murdered. In October, a New York man told 911 operator he had awakened to find himself chained in the basement, believing he had been drugged.
Say, Wesley, 911, where is your emergency?
This is going to sound insane. I'm here in Detroit. I'm from New York. And I met this guy at the bus station who offered me a ride. And I'm not even sure where I am, but I broke out of this fucking basement, and I need a ride.
Okay.
I'm in trouble. I can't even find my way back to his place if I wanted to. I don't know if you can take me a signal. I'm from New York. I'm walking down the street with a picture of my sweetheart. I need help.
Okay, I'm going to get you help. Are you walking down the street right now?
Yes, ma'am, I am. I'm passing a barn. It's all beautiful here. I can't believe I don't know where I am. I don't know, like, I've never ever had anything like this happen. I don't know whether he drugged me. I don't know. I woke up in a fucking basement, okay? Chained in a basement with a leather thing around my ankle, and I cut it with the butcher knife that I have in my freaking hand. Excuse my French.
Okay. Do you have anything on you right now?
I have my phone. I'm sorry, what?
Are you carrying anything?
A butcher knife. Until I see a police officer, when I see a police officer, I will throw it. Until then, I don't trust that he's not walking up because I got lost, and I don't even know if I'm headed towards his house or not. That's why I'm dialing 911. But I'm lost, so I don't even know if I'm headed back towards his house.
He just woke up in a basement. He was chained to something, so he cut the chain off. He's walking.
I cut the leather strap that had the chain.
He's not sure where he's at.
I just want to get out of here, and I want to go home. I don't even care about the legal case I was here for. I'm sorry, I can't help them. I want to go home.
Okay, all right. And listen, I've got help on the way. What were you here for?
I'm a volunteer court advocate. I came here to help in the CSE meeting. And I was supposed to be meeting them at the bus station. I met this guy. I'm bi. He was cute. He hit on me. I know. We went out to the car. We dropped. We went to the store. I had a soda. I woke up in the basement.
Okay.
He obviously drugged me.
Police received a second 911 call a month later in November after a bloodied and terrified man had sought help from Latunsky's neighbor.
Sherwood County 911.
I'll get away from some creepy guy. He hadn't tied up in his basement.
I'm sorry, what's that?
I'm trying to escape from some guy who had me chained up in his basement.
He had you chained in his basement? Where are you calling from?
I don't know. I am heading down this road.
Are you on?
From here.
Okay, hold on 1 second. Looks like you're on Tyrell Road.
I could be.
Are you walking?
Yeah.
Hold on 1 second.
I don't even have shoes on.
3562.
I don't know if I should try to go to someone's house. I don't know where I'm at.
I'm trying to put out a call. 62, okay. You can start off for Tyrell. Just east of Morris Road. Had a subject that was chained up in someone's basement. Just fled the residence. He got on foot.
He's after me.
Hey, Z. I need you to go to somewhere safe. If you can run up to somebody's house. Where are you at right now? Are you getting able to get away?
Help me.
6-2, he's running towards the house. The guy's trying to come after him. I'm trying to get further. Okay, I need an address where you're at. I'm trying to get it.
Now, both of these 911 calls were much longer. I just wanted you to hear that these men were truly terrified for their lives. And unfortunately, they were also too scared to press charges against Latunsky.
And that's a thing you see a lot with, especially cases involving queer people, is a lot of the time these men are often in the closet. And if pressing charges runs the risk of this story getting out and their families, friends, their jobs finding out. And to a lot of people, they'd rather just move on with their life and not try to press charges and not risk their whole life essentially being ruined, you know, if their family or people find out that they are gay or they got caught trying to hook up with a dude. So it's like stuck between a rock and a hard place, and it is a really sad and tragic situation.
Yeah, just as Jordy said, this could be for a lot of reasons, but most likely it was from fear of information about their homosexual encounter becoming public knowledge. This is still a very big issue when it comes to getting LGBTQ+ people to report crimes. Some may still be closeted, while others fear public backlash or shame so much that they refuse to press charges just to keep the incident as private as possible. The police lieutenant at the time was quoted saying, "Nobody wanted the police there. Nobody wanted to file charges. A lot of people have a professional life and a personal life, and they don't want the two to intertwine. The personal life is very secret and very protected." But Kevin's roommate, Michelle Myers, responded to this in a piece done by Rolling Stone magazine saying, "How come Latunsky wasn't even questioned then? Is it because it was just gay guys doing stuff in a basement? What would have happened if a girl was chained in a basement and ran out of there? Even if she said, 'Don't worry about it,' the police would have investigated it more." And I have to agree with this, especially after the second time it happened, just a month after the first time. Even if neither wanted to press charges, the police knew something wrong was going on. and all they would have had to do is do a cursory check on Latunsky to see that there were numerous other reports involving him piling up at the time that these two incidents happened. Unfortunately, we have covered so many cases where the police just brush it off as gay people doing gay shit.
And that's a thing that really shows a lot of the time the bigotry and small-mindedness and stuff like that. And that's one of the reasons we wanted to start the podcast in the first place, is because if you do look at a lot of crimes involving members of the queer community, you know, depending on the area it happened, even in very liberal areas, a lot of the times prejudice and bigotry and homophobia does really affect how the case is handled by the authorities, the public, the press. And so, yeah, that's one of the main reasons we actually started the podcast, was just to bring awareness, especially to cases like this, where it's like, well, two different people, like one time he didn't want to press charges, maybe, but after it happened twice in just a few months.
No, next month. It was 1 month later.
So, and from that point, I feel like, okay, you know, yeah. And again, if it was two girls that had escaped from a man's basement in the span of a month, I do feel like it probably would have been investigated at least a little harder. So it is one of those frustrating, again, and horribly sad things.
Yeah, it's like I said, a lot of times it's just brushed off as gay people doing gay shit, and then they do absolutely nothing about it. And it always makes me think of the cops handing back one of Jeffrey Dahmer's victims back to him after he escaped, and that makes me so angry. But it's like one of the prime examples. But this right here is another prime example of what happened, because there was a man that escaped from his basement in October. There was a man who escaped from his basement in November. And there was a man found murdered in his basement in December. So, I mean, this was every month it escalated. And they done nothing about it.
But then I'm sure if you ask them after the fact, they're like, we had no idea that this could have possibly happened. And it's like, well, also with just the last a month, two men, he's already tried to do it to two previous men, so you at least had a little bit of an idea.
Initially, after his arrest, Latunsky tried to say that Kevin and he had an arrangement, and Kevin knew he was going to be killed and eaten, a la the Armin Muse. But this was soon disproven because they looked at the text messages between them, and it was obvious that Kevin was concerned about his safety and everything, so he wasn't going in there thinking that he was going to die. In early 2020, Latunsky's defense tried for an insanity plea, but it was denied. He was due to stand trial in October 2022, when in September he pleaded guilty against the wishes of his attorneys. This plea involved a judge having to make a final decision on if Latunsky would be guilty of second or first degree premeditated murder. The prosecution pointed out how Latunsky had lured Kevin with the intent of murdering him, pointing out that he had even ordered a dehydrator in anticipation of preparing Kevin's body for consumption. That seems very premeditated to me.
Yeah, I don't think there's any coming back from, you know, not being premeditated at that point.
Yeah, when your food dehydrator for your cannibalism arrives from Amazon 2 days after you've murdered somebody, you had planned this. The defense pointed out that Latunsky had severe mental illness and wasn't capable of understanding the consequences of the murder, and he had even gone to a Christmas party that evening with Kevin's blood still on his clothing. So he was out of touch with reality.
I was about to say, I mean, it's very obvious Mark Latunsky was very unwell. He was a very unwell man, but at the same time, that doesn't give him a right to lure men to his house to cannibalize and murder. And so it's just, again, very frustrating, because it's like, I feel like more focus could have been on his mental health leading up to this, especially after, you know, two men escaped from his basement.
And he kidnapped his children.
So again, it's one of those pieces of the puzzle where it's like, well, you're just going to overlook it until it eventually becomes a problem and someone lost their life over it.
In the end, the judge ruled that the killing was premeditated and Latunsky was guilty of first-degree murder and was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. The judge was quoted as saying, "This court does find that this crime was not committed in a heat of passion," he stated. "This court finds that this is a crime of cold calculation. Kevin Bacon's death was Mark Latunsky's design." And I'm also going to, like, put pictures of Latunsky out, and like, if you Google him like really quick, you're going to see like all these, like, he looks like a crazy man. He has like a huge beard, like, and he's very unkempt, you know, like he's not well taken care of and everything like that. But the more that I dug in and actually found like images from his like social media and profiles and everything, I was like, I hate to admit it, but I could probably have been that man's victim. Like, he was not a bad looking guy.
No, I mean, now when he was in court, he looked like a wizard, like wizard beard, long wizard hair. But if you go back, you can actually see the progression, honestly, of his mental state, judging by his physical appearance. And like, if you go back, it's amazing how just like 4 years prior, looked like a really clean cut guy, happy. And then just slowly, you just see it progress to get worse and worse and worse. And it's so crazy to see how fast and how short of a time it takes for someone to spiral to that point.
And now, this isn't a story to scare people off Grindr or other dating apps. It's more of a cautionary tale. Although this is an extreme case of how things can go wrong, I'm betting there are a lot of people out there with weird or scary encounters involving app hookups. I know I've heard a few of them from my close friends personally, one of which involved a man insisting my friend go into his basement and then trying to block his exit when he tried to leave after him saying that. A lot of times, going into these situations, you aren't exactly thinking with the right head, if you know what I mean. But there are some things you can do to keep yourself safe when using these apps. Be cautious with personal information. Never share your home address, phone number, or full name with someone you haven't met in person and trust. Meet in public places. Always arrange to meet in a well-lit and populated area, and let a friend know where you're going and when you expect to be back. Beware of fake profiles. Look for inconsistencies in profiles and be wary of users who are overly eager to take the conversation off the app. And trust your gut. If something feels off about the interaction, don't hesitate to end it. And then lastly, report suspicious activity. Grindr offers tools for reporting inappropriate behavior and suspicious profiles. Utilize them because you might be saving somebody's life down the line.
And that's the thing is, like, you know, Grindr does have a reputation, of course, amongst not just gay men, but even straight people to an extent, where it's like a lot of people see it as just like a cesspool or like crime or potential criminals and stuff like that. And I mean, it has the potential to be that, but so does everything. So I think it does have a bad reputation attached to it. It is what you make of it. I know people that have met their partners of 10 years on Grindr and they're more than happy, meet good friends and stuff like that. But it's always, of course, best to err on the side of caution at first with anybody you meet on an app like that, especially if you don't know them that well. So yes, always. And I know, again, a lot of people use it for a hookup app, so they're not wanting to meet for coffee or a public area or anything like that. But even if you are just going for a hookup, message a friend, like the address you're going to, or be like, hey, I'm going here. Like, if anything, God forbid, anything does happen, this is where I'm at. This is who I'm with. And, you know, most of the time your friends are going to check in on you often because Grindr hookups are notoriously don't last that long. So if you're not heard from for a while, they're going to alert police and, you know, potentially save your life if something does bad happen.
And another thing is, a lot of times the people that's on Grindr's been on Grindr for a really long time. So you can usually ask some of your other gay friends if they know this profile. And somebody probably does if they are a real person and have probably met them in the past, unless they're just brand new in town. And that does happen sometimes. So the big thing is just have fun, but be careful because bad things can happen. Any tool can be used the wrong way. And for all the benefits and all the great things that Grindr does, and it does do a lot of great things, it really is a gay person's crystal ball. They can look at that and they can see other gay people around them. And I don't think any straight person out there would realize just how powerful that is, because one thing, it shows you you're not the only gay person around. And that's a big deal. Like, you know, when before this, like, you're like, gosh, I'm probably the only gay person in my whole city. And then you flip on Grindr and you're like, oh, well, I guess I'm not.
Yeah, and like, again, Grindr can be used for a great tool to meet people or just realize you're not alone in your area. And there's a lot of headless torso photos around you. Like he was going back before, usually a lot of the profiles you see, most of the time have been on there a while, a good chunk of them. And so they may have a reputation. I know, like, back when I was first, like, coming out as a little gaby, I would ask, like, people I knew that had been around more and be like, oh, he's cute. And they'd be like, actually, let me tell you some horror stories about that guy. I would steer clear of him. And it's like, thank you for the heads up. So it's always good to, you know, discuss with people, friends, if you have that, if you're comfortable with it. And also just, again, trust your gut. Any potential red flags, you know, maybe it's not worth it. And again, if you are just that horny and this is a hookup, just, you know, take 2 seconds, message the location where you're going to your friend or someone close to you, or you never know. And that's the thing is, like, you just never know with people. It's always a gamble on Grindr, on Tinder, on Facebook, anywhere. You're meeting and talking with strangers and deciding to meet up in person. So, you know, like we always say, just stay dangerous out there and, you know, keep an eye out for any suspicious activity.
Yeah, I mean, that's all I got for this week, unless you got something else, Jordy.
No, I thought that was a great episode and actually gave me an idea I think we could do for a bonus episode where we have, like, listeners write in their dating app horror stories.
Oh, I wanted to say that in the episode. I mean, I even had it, like, topped in, like, if you have a horror story off of Grindr or any of the other apps, please let me know. Even if, like, you just want to share them with me, I want to hear them because, like I said, I think almost all of us have kind of had maybe not a horror story, but one of those stories where you're like, my gut told me run, or I had the weirdest interaction in the world. And, you know, it's one of those things with gay people. A lot of times, as soon as they start talking about apps, that's one of the things that comes out. They're like, oh my gosh, the other night, you would not believe what happened. And so I'm always, like, super interested to hear things like that. Because, again, it's just like a lot of these crimes. I would say if you looked up a statistic on Grindr crime, it's going to be a lot lower than it actually is, because most of the gay people are not going to say or come out or come forward about anything that happened to them on that app. You know, it's just, it's sadly, it's one of those things where gay people are very unlikely to report a crime that's happened to again, or gay people are very unlikely to report crimes that happen against them.
Yeah, I think that'd actually be a good bonus episode to put out. Like, I'll make a post on our socials about it, honestly. And if you have, and it doesn't have to be, you know, you're running with a murderer. If that, you know, can be something like date gone wrong, sex gone wrong, you meet someone creepy or anything like that. I feel like that'd be an interesting, really interesting little put together episode for people. And again, it'll just help spread the word. I'll never be too careful out there. And with that, thank you guys again so much for tuning in for another episode. My voice will be back by next week. Until then, thank you, Brad, for taking over this week. I know everyone loves when Brad does episodes, so I'm glad to see you starting to do them more often. And hopefully we'll have another one here soon. And until then, if you like this episode, please leave us a 5-star review or rating on iTunes or Spotify. Helps us out a lot, helps other people discover the podcast. And of course, we just love hearing from you guys, even if it's bad, but hopefully it's good. If you want to see photos from this case, you can follow us on Instagram at Beers with Queers Pod, that's P-O-D, or on Facebook at Beers with Queers, a true crime podcast. And until Monday, stay dangerous out there, my friend.
See you later.
And be careful on Grindr. Bye.